in those moments, I felt like I was at the center of the world. I felt like I was at the most important place on earth, and there was nothing else that mattered.
Hi, I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There, the podcast that explores big questions through intimate stories outdoors. Support for this episode comes from Earth Hero, the one-stop shop for everything sustainable. Earth Hero is an eco-friendly online marketplace that sells over 100 truly sustainable brands. The products they sell are sourced, manufactured, and shipped in a way that protects our planet's future. For 15% off your order, head to earthhero.com and enter the coupon code OUTTHERE at checkout. Again, that's earthhero.com, coupon code OUTTHERE. On today's episode, we're going to talk about control. On a very concrete level, we're talking about control of fire. My guests are the producers of a film about wildland firefighters. But on a deeper level, we're looking at how people take control of their lives, whether that's navigating the shift from childhood to adulthood, or figuring out how to get yourself back on solid ground when your life has spun off kilter. The film that we're discussing is called Wildland, and it follows a crew of firefighters in Oregon over the course of one summer. It takes us from their initial training.
Okay, that was a two-hour workout. The average shift is 12.
To the long hours of waiting.
I absolutely thought there would be a lot more encounters with fire.
I don't know if I brought enough cigarettes for this, dude.
To the thick of the action.
Jesus, go! Air to ground, this is 7 Bravo. Flying lengths are getting bigger, so I don't have a lot of hope for success here.
Eric, he's going to be taking off here shortly. He's going to have a helicopter up here at 3 Hotel Juliet about 30 minutes.
God damn it.
We're joined today by the people who made the film, Alex Jablonski and Khalil Hudson.
I, for one, had always been totally fascinated by wildfire and by wildland firefighters because it was this kind of like last cowboy vibe.
That's Alex.
And so I was like, man, there's got to be a great film here. There's got to be a great film here. And then in thinking about it, the question that we kind of thought of was like, well, I wonder if a lot of guys use that job as a kind of a way of proving themselves, a way of like trying to grow up. And then for me, the question of just that I was thinking about in general was like, well, how do young men grow up? Like, what is the transition out of boyhood into adulthood look like? And what does that mean?
So what prompts people to want to become wildland firefighters? I mean, did you find that this was, as you imagined, sort of this coming of age journey that a lot of people sort of use this as a way to grow up?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we first said our initial idea to people in fire, they were like, oh, like those summers were the most formative summers of my life. And I think the thing that works in the film is like, it doesn't necessarily, I mean, it's very specific to wildland fire, the film is, but the ideas that we're dealing with of, you know, having a summer where you prove yourself, having an experience that you can look back on and say, well, if I did that, I can do, you know, X, Y, and Z. Like, that I think is really universal.
I left Massachusetts, where my family's at, because there is lack of grit. Like, that's the problem with kids, is there is no grit. People don't get up when they fall down, they just kind of fall down and then stay at their parents' house.
I want to feel things. I want to get scrapes and cuts, and I want to sweat, and I want to feel, you know, I want to feel my legs burn when I get to the top of a hill, and I want to feel it. I think those are the things that make me feel alive.
We also saw, which is now part of the film, a lot of guys who kind of like came to this job as you know, maybe near the last chance for them to really turn their lives around, or as a way for them to break free of a past that had been, you know, troubled.
I just want my life straight, you know?
Well, yeah. How are you gonna do that?
But I'm not really here for the money, to be honest with you. I mean, yeah, that's important, and I am a father, but really, I just want the work.
Sure.
If you were selected, could you be away from home for long periods of time,
Absolutely.
Up to 2 months at a time?
Absolutely.
Work long days, long weeks,
yes.
100-hour weeks?
Absolutely.
What, you wanna tell me about that little tattoo there?
I used to own a professional tattoo shop, actually.
Oh.
So it's not prison stuff.
Okay.
None of it.
I just wanted to ask.
I mean, we talked about, you know, initially, you know, this being a coming of age story.
That's Alex's co-producer, Khalil Hudson.
But, you know, we quickly kind of pivoted, you know, after we saw who, you know, the types of people that were that we were encountering. I mean, you have the younger two guys, Aiden and Charlie, who are, you know, college educated. They're articulate. You know, they've never seen the inside of a prison. And then you have Tim, who is the crew boss. And you know, halfway through the film, you discover his background. And his background, you know, he went through a very dark time in his life. And then you have Banner, who's, you know, recently released from prison. And so we kind of had these different, you know, these people at different points in their lives kind of that all represented different stages of, you know, of manhood.
Just to jump in on that, I mean, I would argue that leaving a past like that behind and doing this is actually a moment of coming of age. You know, because when your only accountability and your only when the only accountability you find in the world is like in, you know, institutions and going to jail, like you haven't grown up yet. And I think that when you do this, not only are you going to have to be accountable to yourself in terms of showing up on time and doing the work, but you suddenly become accountable to 19 other people. And I think that's a really, really big change for some of these guys.
Did you find that these different types of people got along with each other? I mean, because you have these really young, like 20-something kids who are sort of after adventure, and then you've got these much more seasoned older guys who have been through a lot in life. Did they click?
I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that the film's really trying to get at, right, is in these environments where you're working together, you're sweating together, you know, the clicking or the getting along is not so much something that's like frequently articulated. It's not like, hey, I like you, you're good, we have this in common, and now we're buddies. It's more just this like slow earning of mutual respect and then likability and enjoying each other. You know, that comes with it in bits and pieces. But I mean, I think what we're really trying to show is that simply by like riding in the same, you know, buggy with these guys and working the same ground and hiking the same area, like there's this weird, ethereal, almost like bond that just forms. It just comes about.
And that was you know, the places that they're coming from couldn't be more different, right? And yet, if you put in the time, if you put in the effort, if you're willing to be out, you know, digging line for 14, 16 hours a day, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, what you've been through in your life, or, you know, you earn that respect from the rest of the crew.
Mm. So for people who aren't familiar with it, how does wildland firefighting actually work? I mean, this is not like firefighting in a town or a city where, you know, you have fire hydrants and the fire engine shows up, and it, like, this is a very different animal. And I think a lot of what many of us know of it is what we see on the news, which is sort of, you know, these dramatic pictures of huge fires and see these sort of sweeping views. But what is this like on a very concrete level for the wildland firefighters?
Right. So, I mean, on a really, really basic level, fire starts in the forest. Typically that is like campfire that someone left out, but a lot of times it's a lightning strike. So it's in an extremely remote area. And so the only way to get in there, obviously there are smoke jumpers who parachute in, and there are hill attack teams who rappel out of helicopters. But, you know, the kind of, the infantry of wildland firefighting are these hand crews. And the way that fire is fought by these guys is essentially the same way it's been fought for the last 50, 60 years, which is, so when you're in a fire, it is typically not up in the trees. You're not looking up at the fire. The fire's on the ground. So you have everything burning on the ground. And the way that you stop a fire from spreading is to limit its fuel. And the way that you can limit its fuel is you dig a line around, right next to the fire. That's what's called digging hotline. And you dig it down to mineral soil. So you're essentially removing the fuel in this 2 foot wide path. And you just dig like a team, as if you were, you know, making a ditch, but not going that far down. And so what happens is then when the fire reaches that point where it can't continue to crawl along, it lays down.
It really is fascinating to me how manual this all is. I mean, this is a bunch of guys using hand tools, which, I mean, it makes sense, but it's also just fascinating to think of in, you know, our this age of high technology.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a kind of timeless thing. I mean, and that's one of the beautiful things about it.
So one of the things that really interested me about this film was how much these guys actively wanted to be on the front lines of the fire. I mean, they wanted to be in the thick of it. And they even describe it as being kind of addictive, which to me was surprising, because, you know, I think of this and I think, oh my gosh, like, this sounds like a horrific job. You are working brutally long hours. It's like incredibly hard work, oppressive heat. You know, you're constantly suffocated by smoke. So why do people like this? Why is it addictive?
Well, yeah, I mean, as portrayed in part of the film, you know, this experience is not only strenuous, but it can be quite tedious and boring, right? When you're waiting for an assignment, or, you know, there were days when we were just, you know, days in a row where we were staging. So you're sitting, you know, in your buggy, you're waiting for that call. And time passes incredibly slowly when you're sitting there for 10, 12 hours. When you actually get into, when you get close to the fire, when you can see the fire, when you can smell the, you know, when you can see the smoke, and time begins passing more quickly. So that's part of it. But there's an excitement. And when you're actually right there, you know, you get an adrenaline rush. When you're in a burning forest, it sounds like there are jet engines all around you. There's a roar. I mean, it is an experience like no other. And so that the great paradox is, yes, firemen are hoping that a fire starts, you know,
and it then seems when so counterintuitive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And when you're on that fire, you know, you're on a big fire. We were on a very big fire in California. You know, there are a couple thousand, firefighters that are some of whom are being called very, you know, to, you know, the front line, you know, you're hoping to be in that group.
And I'll say this, Willow. I mean, so just for me, the thing that I was really struck by is when you are, you know, digging hotline and there's fire around, and oftentimes, I mean, you're not seeing another crew. It's just you and your crew in this burning fire. Like, you're not thinking about anything else. You're not thinking about what's going on at home. You're not thinking about what's going on in other parts of the world. And to me, the feeling that was so powerful is in those moments, I felt like I was at the center of the world. I felt like I was at the most important place on earth, and there was nothing else that mattered. And like, that was such a draw. And I don't know how easy it is to describe, but you just feel like this is it. This is all there is. Like, this is I am looking at the entirety of the world right now.
Do you think there's something universal about that? I mean, do you think any of us would have that response if we were put into that situation? Or does it take a certain type of person to get that?
It definitely takes a certain type of person. I think some people certainly would freak out. And, you know, Tim, our crew boss, had stories of guys getting into situations like that and getting back to fire camp and being like, I'm done. I didn't like that at all. And I want to go home, and just quitting on the spot. So I think it does take a certain personality type, but I think that's like self-selecting. Like, I don't even think that you start going out there unless you know that you're going to be able to, or you think you're going to be able to handle it.
One of the themes that that the film touches on is this idea of controlling chaos, and it kind of goes to goes back to this idea that you have a group of guys who are not just looking for adventure, but they're looking for some balance in their life, and they're looking for some control. If you are fresh out of prison, you haven't had any sort of control over your own life for whatever time you've been in prison. And so when you're fighting fire, you are the whole point is to control nature, right? And so, you know, it's exciting to be in the middle of this burning forest that, you know, is almost out of control, but you do have some control over it.
Can't think of anywhere else I'd rather be right now, or doing anything different than I'm doing right this minute.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break because I want to tell you about one of our sponsors. Support for Out There comes from Green Chef. So, let's face it, most of us are pretty busy people, so it can be tough to actually put together healthy, tasty meals. Green Chef makes it easy and affordable to eat well. They deliver meal kits straight to your door, and each one includes a variety of organic ingredients. By the way, Green Chef is a USDA-certified organic company. So they actually sent me several of their meals to try out. All right, so I just got a box from Green Chef. Let's see what's inside. All right, so there's a bunch of separate, it looks like each meal comes in its own separate little package. Each meal kit has a recipe plus all the ingredients I'll need already measured out. All right, so I'm gonna try and make, what am I making? I am making dukkah spiced pork chops with roasted squash, chard, and couscous salad with dates. Sounds very fancy. I have never made pork chops before, so this will be a true experiment. So the pork chops turn out really well. It's a meal I never would have come up with on my own. And I should say, if you're not into eating meat, this is not a problem. Green Chef has vegetarian, vegan, and pescatarian options. Plus, you can select gluten-free, heart smart, paleo, keto, lean and clean, all the options. For $50 off your first box of Green Chef, go to greenchef.us/out there. That's greenchef.us/out there. And now back to our interview. Did you find that that this job did what people were hoping it would do for them? Like, especially these guys who are really trying to restart their lives, did becoming a wildland firefighter succeed in doing that for them?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it succeeded in doing that for me. You know, like,
Well, and I was going to ask about this because you actually participated in the training while you were filming this, correct?
Well, not only did we participate in the training, we became firefighters. We became members of the crew. So when we were out there, we were actually working as members of the crew, and we were only shooting about 10 or 15% of the time that we were out there.
Oh,
so
wow.
everything the crew was going through, we were going through. And, you know, I've seen it with guys who are not in the film, and I've seen it with the guys who are in the film. This absolutely gave them something that they didn't have before, and they carried themselves differently. They had a different attitude. They had a different kind of, swagger, for lack of a better term, going forward in their lives.
Hmm. Why did you decide to do the training and become firefighters yourselves as opposed to just doing the film and filming it?
The risk in making a documentary like this, if you are parachuting in and you're there for a little bit and then you're out and then you do that over and over again, I think the risk is that you have this kind of idea of what the film is about and you begin imposing that idea on your subjects as opposed to like letting it come to you. And so like there are, I mean, I can think of a dozen shots that are in the film that we only would have gotten had we lived this.
And just to add to that, there was a marked difference. When we first started shooting, you know, it was very much like, oh, there's the camera guys. and then once fire season started, and we started working alongside these guys and pulling out our cameras, you know, at the end of the day or half, you know, at lunch break and filming here and there, it very much became, oh, here's Khalil and Alex who happen to have cameras, right? So once we became part of the crew, we were no longer filmmakers. I mean, we were, but
also one of them.
Yes, we were one of them, and we were. I think there was a shift in that access and in that trust. I think that people gave us because they saw us working alongside them.
What do you hope audiences will take away from this film?
Really, I think the idea that most stuck with me was to give it as truthful of an experience of what it's like to live through a summer as a wildland firefighter. For me, I think that's the most important thing I hope people can take away is that when they come out of the theater after an hour and a half, that they feel like they've lived this experience.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is this experience. And I also think that, you know, inherent in this film is this idea that if you can sit with what makes you uncomfortable, if you can really be honest and push through, you know, the things that are tough in your life, like, and you get to the other side of that, no one can take that away from you. Like, you get to keep that and hold on to that forever.
My guests were Alex Jablonski and Khalil Hudson. Their film is called Wildland and will be available for pre-sale on iTunes starting April 15th. It'll be available everywhere for rent or purchase on April 30th. If you'd like to see Wildland on the big screen, just go to wildlandfilm.com to find out where it's playing. If it's not playing anywhere near you, you can book it for a nearby local movie theater. Again, that's all at wildlandfilm.com. Before you go, I wanted to share some behind-the-scenes updates. For a really long time, if I'm being honest, I was kind of cautious about Out There. I was still holding down a part-time day job to pay the bills, and I wasn't making any money off the show. It was a true labor of love. Then, last spring, I quit my day job. I decided it was time to take a leap of faith and truly commit to Out There. For the past year, I've been working on the podcast full-time, and I've been pouring everything into it. I truly want to make it the best show it can be, and I want it to grow and thrive and become a beloved household name. I also want to be a good boss to the people who work with me. I want to treat them well, and I want to compensate them for their time. But the reality is, I don't have the money to do that. Last year, I made less than $1.50 an hour from the show, and none of my colleagues fared any better. We've made that work for a while, but it can't work forever. We absolutely love making the show, but we also need to pay the rent and put food on the table. My goal for the coming year is to raise enough money to pay myself and my team at least minimum wage. Minimum wage is still minimum wage, but it would be such a big step up from where we are right now. So, if you're in a position to help us out, we're asking that you make a financial contribution to the show. We have a goal of raising $3,000 a month on Patreon, which is a big goal, but hey, we like to dream big. In case you're not familiar with it, Patreon is a crowdfunding platform for creative endeavors. It lets you make monthly contributions to projects you care about. You can pledge any amount, even if it's just a dollar or two a month. Those little contributions really do add up, and we appreciate and value every single one. We've just revamped our Patreon page, and we have a bunch of new and exciting rewards to offer you as a thank you for your support. A couple of the rewards that I'm especially excited about are our brand new postcard club, where you'll receive a handwritten postcard from me a couple times a year. And at our highest pledge level, we'll thank you by highlighting a nonprofit of your choice on the show. That way, you get to support Out There and give some love to a cause you care about. To become a patron, just head over to our website, outtherepodcast.com, and click support. There, you'll find a link to our Patreon page. Or you can go straight to patreon.com/outtherepodcast. Thank you so much in advance. As I mentioned at the top of the show, support for this episode comes from Earth Hero, the one-stop shop for everything sustainable. Earth Hero's goal is to make it second nature to buy things responsibly. They're on a mission to make it normal to consume in a way that's easier on the environment while still meeting the convenience we've come to expect. Their online store sells over 100 brands that have been thoroughly vetted. They're not just brands that are talking the talk about being green, they're actually walking the walk. In other words, whatever you buy from Earth Hero, you can rest assured that it's been sourced, manufactured, and shipped in a way that protects the planet's future. Plus, at Earth Hero, you'll get the best price guaranteed. For 15% off your purchase, head to earthhero.com and use the coupon code OUTTHERE at checkout. That's earthhero.com, coupon code OUTTHERE. That's it for this episode. Our marketing and business development director is Alex Egger-King. Our advertising coordinator is Jessica Taylor. Laura Johnston heads up our ambassador program. And our theme music was written by Jared Arnold. We'll see you in 2 weeks. And in the meantime, have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.